Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Shor shenagach et ha'adam umeit. The shor that gores an individual and kills them, mu'ad, if the shor is a mu'ad mishalem kofer, then he is obligated to pay kofer, as the Torah says, in a case where a shor kills an individual, then the gam balav yumat, and what is the mitah of the balim is that they have to pay kofer. On the other hand, tam patur mina kofer, a tam, which is not mentioned in that parshia is about a mu'ad, does not have to pay kofer. But despite the fact that a tam does not pay kofer, in the instance where a shor kills, in either instance, whether they're a mu'ad or a tam, then they are subject to the death penalty. The shor is killed for killing a ben adam. And that is true also by a ben and a bat. Over here, they're referencing the pasuk, or the lashona pasuk, that says, what the chiddush of this point to the Mishnah is, according to the Mukhe Yosef, that we even include ketanim over here. You would have a havamina that by ketanim, which are not b'nei mitzvot, maybe the shor does not need to be killed. Along comes the Torah to tell you, in the case of ketanim, the shor is still chayav mita. It also comes to exclude the case of, whether it's bladot or a nefel, those individuals that are not considered to be bar kayama, that they aren't viable entities, those are not subject to this requirement that the animal be killed if it kills those entities. Nagach eved oama, if it gores and kills an eved knani or an ishivcha knanit, notein shloshim slaim, and he pays the owner of the eved knani or the shivcha knanit 30 shekel, benchu yafem me'amaneh, whether the eved or the ama is worth 100 maneh, which is 100 times 100 or 10,000, ben she'enu yafeh el dinar echad, or whether it's only valued at 1 dinar, irrespective of his value, you pay 30 shekel, which in essence makes that a knas, which the Gemara will discuss further on tomorrow's daf. Now, the Gemara asks the obvious question that derives from the Mishnah, which is, v'chim ha'achar demitam katlina leh, mu'ad eicha mishkachala. If the shor is chayav mitah when he's a tam and he kills, then how would you ever get to a point where you have a shor mu'ad that is killing? A shor mu'ad would have to be a shor that killed 3 times, and then became a mu'ad for killing, and then kills a 4th time, according to the Balei Tosafot, maybe according to Rashi, kills a 3rd time. That's the only instance where you'd end up with kofer or a mu'ad that is killing. But how could it get to that point if it was subject to the death penalty for the first 3 times that it gored while it was a tam? So Amar Rabbah, Umay Eskinan, Gengol Sham, Du'a, L'Shtosha, B'nei Adam. That it was a case where they assessed the behavior of the shor, that when it does kill, or when it started to gore, that it had the capacity or the capability of killing 3 people. That he chased down 3 people, and the circumstances lead us to believe that he would have killed those people had they not escaped from his goring. So he's gotten to the point where he brought 3 people to the precipice of death, but they escaped by the skin of their teeth, and therefore we know that this is a killer shor. Ravashi Amar Umdin Alav Klumhu. The fact that we assess it or we estimate that that would be the case has no bearing whatsoever. That's not fact. Elahach of Maya Skinan, what's the case here? Kagon Shisikin L'Shlosha B'nei Adam. He gored 3 individuals who are now on their deathbeds, and then after the final goring, all of them pass away. So it all happens together at the same time that they pass away. So there wasn't these interim stages in which they could put him to death for goring and killing someone while he was a tam. But on a cumulative basis now, he has racked up 3 deaths based on his goring. Rav Zvid Amar, Kigon Sharag Shlosha Behemot, in a case where he kills 3 animals. The Gemara says about that, Mu'ad Behemah V'Mu'ad Adam. Wait, how does that help you? Just because he killed 3 animals, who says that killing 3 animals or being a mu'ad for a behemah is also makes you into a mu'ad le adam? We know from before in the Gemara that Adam has a mazal, and therefore he has a higher threshold for making an animal into a mu'ad. And just like a mu'ad for nezek of a behemah is not mu'ad le adam, and even there are even opinions that if he's mu'ad adam, he's not mu'ad le behemah. So clearly here, if he's mu'ad to killing behemot, doesn't mean that he's mu'ad to killing adam. Ela amar Rav Shimi. Rav Shimi suggests another answer. Kagon Sharag Shlosha Ubde Kochavim. He killed 3 non-Jews. The Gemara again queries, Umuad Ubde Kochavim, Havi Muad Yisrael? Just because you're Muad for an Ubde Kochavim, who says you are Muad Yisrael? That either is because B'nai Yisrael afforded additional Hashkacha Pratit, And therefore, just because it kills Obdei Kochavim doesn't mean that it has the capacity or will kill Israel, or the fact that the Jews dress differently, and therefore it is comfortable or at ease around those individuals. But when we see someone who is not a part of that social circle and it kills them, it's because of the oddity of that person rather than the fact that it kills people in general. So therefore, how can you conclude just because it killed 3 Obdei Kochavim that it would also kill Israel, and it should not be a muat? Ela amar Rav Shimon Lakish, kagon sharak shlosha bnei adam trefa. It kills 3 individuals who are trefot. These are individuals who have a serious enough issue with them that that issue would cause them to die within the next 12 months. And since they are considered to be a trefa, or in essence, a walking dead person, when the animal kills them, he's not chayav mita because he killed a dead person already. Gemara asks again, umad the trefa, vimuad the shalem? Just because he's a mu'ad to kill individuals who are weaker or who are close to death, who says that then they're going to kill regular individuals or people who are not trefot? How can you extrapolate from one to the other? El Amar Rav Papa then suggests the katil v'arak da'agma, the katil v'arak da'agma, that it was a case where he killed, and then after we already brought him to trial, it ran away. And the same thing happened again. So the animal keeps running away after it's being tried or after the balim are warned about it. So it slowly accumulates the negichot or the killings to get to a mu'ad, and we have been unable to execute the shor because it keeps running away. Rav Acha b'rei de Rav Ika amar kegon shehuzmu zomamei zomamim. It's a case here where you had edim zomamim, and then those edim zomamim were discredited by another set of edim zomamim, and that's how we get to it. Now, what exactly the scenario is, Rashi describes over here that Edim came along and testified to the fact that this ox gored once and killed someone. A second set of Edim came along and testified that this ox gored and killed someone. And there is a third set of Edim that does the same thing. Along come the Edim Zomamim and say, none of you could have testified about the shore on the given days that you were there, because Imano eat them. You were with us all of that time. So in that way, they discredit or disqualify the Edim that testified about the fact that it had killed and now is subject to the death penalty. All of a sudden, we get another set of Edim that come in and say about the Edim Zomamim, these Edim Zomamim are false witnesses because they were with us. Imanu Aitim. Once you discredit the Edim Zomamim, then all the original testimonies go back to being true because you got rid of the set of Edim that disqualified the Edim that were testifying with regards to the shore killing. And that means now all of a sudden at once you have 3 testimonies about a shore that killed that now come to be true again because of the fact that we've disqualified the Edim Zomamim through Zomamei Zomamim. Where it says, Inicha ila Yudei Torah be'inan Shapir. That works well according to the opinion that says you just need the shore to have done something 3 times in order to become a mu'ad. Ela ila Yudei Gavra be'inan. If you require that the balim be warned in each instance, how does that help you over here? May marmalei lo v'yadano. The owner of the shore can say, I didn't know that he had killed the 3 times. I wasn't aware of that. And I was not made aware of it in addition by the fact that the edim that came to testify, I didn't believe them anymore because we had edim zomamim that disqualified them. It's a case where the owner of the shore was present at the location of the killing. The Edim in each instance said that the Balim were there when the Shor killed. And that means even when the Edim Zomamim come along and disqualify the first set of Edim, the Baal himself knows that his Shor killed because he was present at the scene of the crime. And therefore he can't make a claim that he wasn't there, he didn't know. He does know about it. And therefore when we reinstate these Edim after the Edim Zomamim are discredited, then the Balim know or were in essence warned to the fact that their Shor killed 3 times. Therefore, it can be made into a mu'ad. Now, the Rishonim ask over here, according to this shita, we could have used the same answer that we had given earlier in the Masechta, which is, it's a situation in which all 3 sets of Edim show up on a single day to testify about the fact that this shor killed. And since they all come at once, the shor never reaches the death penalty before the fact that it became a mu'ad, because all the testimony came in at once. The reason that the Gemara does not use that scenario or that example is because that will only work according to one who says that it's the Udei Torah, that you can become a mu'ad simply by the knowledge of the fact that the shor has acted this way in a recurring basis or a consistent basis. But according to one who says that you have to warn the Balim, or Yehudei Gavra Ba'inan, that answer would not work. And the Gemara here is trying to work according to both Shitot, and that's why even here, in the case of the Edim Zomamim, the Gemara tries to find a way that it will work for both opinions, whether it's Yehudei Torah or Yehudei Gavra, and that's why the Gemara doesn't bring that alternate example that we had earlier in the Masechta, because that was actually a nafkamina between those two Shitot, and therefore they don't want to bring it here, because it won't solve the problem for both Deot. Ravina Amar, Ravina claims it's b'makirim et balashor, v'makirim et tashor. The case where they recognize the owner of the shore, they know who owns the shore, they just don't know which particular shore was doing the goring. And then, later on, in the time as it goes on to gore more and more, from Rashi it seems like the Edim now recognize the shore, so now after the fact they know, or they have enough evidence of the fact that it was this particular shore that was doing, and therefore they can make him into a muad. The others, like the Rambam, who seem to think that even if you never identify the particular shore, nevertheless there is a chazaka or an umdana that the same shore is the one doing this damage all the time. Therefore, the Baal HaShor could be chayav kofer even without identifying the particular shore. My ass, my avalei the meivad. What is the guy supposed to do? They tell him that one of your shvarim killed or one of your shvarim did something that was problematic, and now he's got a whole herd of them. What's he supposed to do? Shem darmalei tor nagach itlach bebakarcha. Because the Edim are telling him that he has this wild shore amongst his animals, you have to now ensure or guard all of your animals because of this one animal that's there. So you know there's a problem. If you know there's a problem, you know you've got to take the proper precautions with regards to all your animals in order to protect against anything untoward happening with the particular animal that is problematic. So those are the different suggestions by the Amoraim as to how you have a shor muad if a shor tam is put to death in each of these instances. What's interesting here is in the three cases that were brought down towards the beginning of the sugya, each of them, the Gemara responded and said, can't be, and asked some sort of rhetorical question, which is, we had Rav Zvid said, k'kol sharak shlosha be'emot, and the Gemara says, muad be'emav imuad adam, and then we have Elam Rav Shimi, k'kol sharak shlosha uvdei kochavim, and the Gemara again asks, muad uvdei kochavim imuad Yisrael. And then Amalei Shimon Lakish going Sharak Shlosha Bnei Adam Trefa, and the Gemara again asks Muad the Trefa Muad the Shalaim. Rashi points out in at least two out of the three cases that the statement after each one of these answers is a rhetorical question. It's a bitmia, and therefore the Gemara is rejecting it. The reason Rashi knows this is because the subsequent answer of the Gemara begins with the word Ella, and as I've pointed out to you many times, when the Gemara uses the word Ella, it's a rejection of the previous answer and then shifting to a totally new answer. In each of those instances, after the rhetorical question, the Gemara says Ella, indicating that they don't accept or do not believe that the previous answer was good. And that's why Rashi in all likelihood read those answers as being answers that are bitmia. What's interesting is that if you go to the Rambam Hilchot Niske Mamon, paskins like each of these answers. And he says, with regards to how is it possible to make a mu'ad out of an animal that would have been killed if it was a tam kagum? Sharag shlosha goyim, v'charka charag Yisrael. Shem muad the goyim, harizem muad the Yisrael. O sharag shlosha Yisrael trefa, v'charka charag shalem. O harag shlosh beimot, harizem muad arigao, v'alav mishalmim et hakofer. So here the Rambam accepts all three of these answers. What it seems from the Rambam, and that is mentioned by the Magid Mishnah over there, and the Kesef Mishnah over there, is the fact that he read these statements after those suggestions as not being a bitmia, but rather a statement of fact, which is that if you say that the behema that he killed behemoth three times, then you have to believe that muad the behema, havi muad the adam. So not that that's a question, it's just the statement of the narrowness of that answer, which is only works or applies according to the one who says that muad the behema is muad the adam. And same thing with the sharag shloshav de chachavim, Muad of the Kochavim, Avi Muad Yisrael. You have to believe that a Muad of the Kochavim is a Muad Yisrael. Again, a statement of fact. And the same thing with the Trefa, Muad the Trefa, Avi Muad the Shalim. The difficulty with the Rambam Shita is the fact that the word Ella appears after each of these answers. And that's what the Kesef Mishnah, Magid Mishnah, suggests, that maybe the Rambam had a different Girsa in the Gemara that did not include the word Ella. And therefore he read the statements after each one of these suggestions is exactly that. Statements and not questions. The biggest difficulty in the Shita of the Rambam is that the Rambam in Hilchot Nizakin says that if an animal is mu'ad the hezek adam, it's not mu'ad the behema. And I'll say it's a kosher cane the other way around, that if it's mu'ad the behema, it's not mu'ad the adam. So it turns out that the Rambam is paskening with gabe nezek, that mu'ad the behema is not mu'ad the adam. On the other hand, by killing the animal, the shor, who is mu'ad the kill behema, is mu'ad to kill an adam. And so why is there that inconsistency? The Avi Azri wants to use the chakira that we spoke about with regards to nezek before, that what is the trigger for nezek, and what is the trigger for the obligations of kof for the gabe hariga, and the differences will lead to this outcome, which is that by the case of nezek, the obligation by nezek is to make compensation or restitution for the damage that was done. On the other hand, with regards to tashlume kofar, the kofar is paid because of the pshia of the balim and the shmira that they did. So with regards to restitution or compensation, it's not equal. Making restitution or compensation to a behema for the nezek that was done is very different than doing that with regards to an adam. And just because a behema is mu'ad to damage other behemot, and you're going to have to make monetary payments for the nezek that's done, you cannot extrapolate that from the behemah to the adam. On the other hand, when it comes to a lack of proper guarding of the animal, that should be applicable no matter who the animal goes out to kill or affects. In that the pshia of the balim, the negligence of the balim, not to watch the animal properly, is what leads to the ox going out and killing another behemah. But it's the same reason that the ox goes out and kills an adam, is because the balim were not properly engaged with their animal. So the deficit that allowed the behemah to be killed is the same deficit that allowed the man to be killed, and therefore mu'ad behemah will be a mu'ad adam. And that's how the Avi Azri distinguishes between these two psakim of the Rambam. The Lachalat Moshe takes on a much more practical view of the issue, which is it's much easier for an animal to damage another animal than it is to damage an adam, because an adam has dat, and he's able to escape or move away. Whereas a behemah does not have dat, and therefore damage to a behemah is much easier to come by than damage to an adam. On the other hand, with regards to harigah, then by killing, it's much easier to kill an adam than it is to kill a behemah, just because of the difference in sizes. An adam is smaller, and therefore a blow to an adam is more likely to kill an adam than a blow to a behemah, which is much larger, much bigger, that would not kill him. So therefore, you can extrapolate mu'ad the behemah for killing to mu'ad the adam. Whereas by nezek, you can't extrapolate. And for those practical reasons, there's a difference in the conclusion of the Rambam, gabei nezek and harigah, as to whether you can extrapolate mu'ad the behemah to mu'ad the adam. And now the Gemara continues to discuss the Mishnah, and it quotes a braita and then a whole sugi in the Gemara, which we saw in the Gemara in Kiddushin, an identical Gemara, which is Tanu Rabbanan. Mimashma shenemar sakoli sakel hashor. The Torah tells us that the plight of this shore that killed someone is sakoi sakel, that he will be stoned. In yodea shenevelahi. Don't I know that automatically it becomes a nevela? So why does the Torah tell us that when it comes higach shor et ish o et isham vameit, sakoli sakel ashor, veloya chelet bisaro, that you can't eat that which is the carcass of the animal? But isn't that absolutely clear from the fact that you stoned him? If you stoned him, of course it's a nevela. If it's a nevela, you can't eat it. So, any yodesh nevelahi, un nevela surah b'achila. Matam alomar. Therefore, what does the pasuk say when it says lo yachel et bisaro? What do I need that extra language to tell me you can't eat it? It's obvious that you can't eat it. The Balei Tosafot, they ask over here, what do you mean? Why is it so obvious that sakoli sakel results in nevela that you can't eat? We have a ben pkua, which is this unusual case where an animal is shechted, and there is a live animal still inside of it, meaning that there's a mother carrying a baby. That animal, or that live animal that's inside the mother, is mutar with the shechita of the mother, and therefore does not require another shechita. So if that's the case, all you have to do is kill the animal so it's not ever minachai, and you can eat from this ben pkua. So Tosafot says, if this ben pkua goes ahead and then kills someone, and is subject to mitah, if you stone the animal, then it's not automatically a nevela, you could eat that animal. So why isn't that the possibility of why the Torah comes out of its way to tell us that not only is it sakoi sakel, but that you're not allowed to eat it? So even if it is, or even if it doesn't require shechita, you're not allowed to eat it. Tosafot, in the end, just says that the Gemara has other questions and answers and didn't get involved in this. But there are others, like the Raivud, that suggest over here that the whole premise of the limud is the fact that if the Torah says you have to be sakoi sakel, that you have to stone the animal, not only is the stoning of the animal a punishment or to get rid of this animal that killed someone, but it's also a punishment to the Balim that they lose their shor. So it's clear here that the Torah is not trying to have this shor be killed and then you get to eat the animal afterwards. That's clearly not the intent of the Torah. The Torah wants to penalize the owner of the animal. And if that's the case, it's obvious that if the shor has to be stoned, it can't be that the Torah would allow the owners to eat the animal or to benefit from the basar and so on and so forth of the animal. And that would also eliminate the question of the Balei HaTosafot, because it doesn't matter that it's a ben pekuah. The mere fact that we require you to stone this animal is an indication that we don't want the Balim to get any benefits. And therefore, what is the Torah coming along and adding when it says, Lo yachel et bisaro? Magid lecha katuv, shim shachato la'achar shenigmar dino, asur v'achila. It comes to teach you that if you shech after the gmar din of the animal, that it's asur v'achila. So even though you shechted it properly, but since it's already after the conclusion of the case that determined that this animal is chayav mita, the Torah tells you that if you shecht at that point in time, it's deemed to be a nevela, and you can't eat it. Einli ela b'achila. Now I know that it's asur b'achila, b'hana'a minayin. How do I know it's also asur b'hana'a? Tamalomar b'alashor naki. My mashma. What does b'alashor naki have to do with or teach you with regards to the fact that there's nisar hana? Shimon ben Zoma omer, kadam shomer l'chaviro, yatzai ish ploni naki minichasav. It's like the expression that is used that says, like, a person went free and clear of all of his possessions. Free and clear of all of his possessions, and he was stripped of all of his possessions. He got nothing out of them. He got no hana benefit whatsoever from his possessions. And same thing over here. Balashor Naki means that he's cleaned out of his possession. He's totally disowned from this possession so that he can get no hana from this possession. Omimai delo yachelet b'sero lehecha d'shachto l'achar shengmar dino shasur b'achila. How do you know that that's the point of Lo Yachelet Basaro, and that's the purpose of it here, is to teach you that if you shechted it after the Gemar Din, after already the case was concluded, and the psak was that it was subject to a death penalty, and then you shechted it, that it's Asur B'Achila, let us say no, that after the Gemar Din, if you go ahead and shecht the animal, and Ochanami be mutar, and you could eat it. Lo Yachelet Basaro, Lehechad Desak Le'Miskal. And the purpose of Le'echel B'Sero is coming to teach you a din with regards to when the animal is stoned. That the Asur B'Hana'ahu, and that it is Asur B'Hana'ah. Not only is it Asur B'Achila, which a Nevela is, Asur B'Achila, but a Nevela is Mutar B'Hana'ah. So Le'echel B'Sero comes to teach you not only is it Asur B'Achila, it's also Asur B'Hana'ah. And we'll use the Balashor Naki, as Rashi says over here, either to exclude Chatzi Kofer, or Dmei Vladot, as we'll see on the second half of today's daf, according to the Balei Tosafot, tell you that you're not allowed to get hana from the ore, not allowed to get hana from the skins, the hides of the animal. Now, why would you think that Lo Yachel B'Saro is coming to teach you an Isur Hana? It says Achila. The answer is, Kid Rabbi Abou, Dama Rabbi Abou, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Koma Kom Shneemar, Lo Yochal, Lo Tochel, Lo Tochlu, Echad Yisur Achila, V'chad Yisur Hana B'mashma. Anytime the Torah uses a Lashon of Achila, not only does it mean Achila, it means Achila and Hana'a. Or in essence, Achila is the ultimate form of Hana'a that a person can experience from an item. So therefore the Torah expresses it as Achila, but it doesn't mean solely or exclusively Achila, it means anything that brings Hana'a to the individual, and Achila is just an example of that. So anytime that the Torah uses the word Achila, it doesn't solely mean Isur Achila, that also means Nisar Hana'ah, and so too over here. It says, Le'echel B'Saro, it also should mean Nisar Hana'ah. Ad Shifaret Lecha Ketuv, Kederach Shifaret Lecha B'Nevela. Until it specifies otherwise, like it did by Nevela. Because over there, by the Nevela, it tells you that the Ger V'Nitina, L'Odeicha Chavim B'Mechira, which the Pasuk tells us over there, that you can give it to a Ger, or sell it to an Ovdei Kol Chavim, explicitly giving you permission to get Hana'ah from the Nevela. Even though all it said over there, all that it restricted over there was Achila. So from the fact that the Torah had to specify that you are Mutar Bahana there, it shows you that the Achila already subsumed within it an Isur Achila and an Isur Hana. So until you have some similar wording by any other case of Isur Achila would bind with it or combine within an Isur Hana. Where it says, Amrei Hani Milehechet Denafik Le Isur Achila Av Isur Hana Mikra Milo Yochal. That makes sense when the Torah is expressing the Isur Achila through an Isur Achila that would also incorporate an Isur Hana'ah. We already know the Isur Achila from the fact that you have to stone the animal. Isakadat, hay lo yachelet bisaro isur hanahu. If you really think that lo yachel bisaro is coming to teach you that there should be isur hanah, nichtov rachmana lo yahaneh. Then the Torah should have said, instead of lo yachel, it should have said lo yahaneh. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that Rabbi Bo's din makes sense when the Torah is coming to teach you that it's asur ba'achila. So incorporated in the isur achila is also an isur hanah. It expresses it as achila because, again, achila is the ultimate form of hana'ah, and it's also asur ba'achila. So incorporated within that isur achila is isur hanah. But if you already have an isur achila from a different limud, like in our case where it's from Sukkot Yisakel, the Torah would not express the isur hanah through achila because that would be a duplication. Here, it's only focused on hana'ah, and therefore it should express it as an isur hana'ah, not as an isur achila, if the achila is already known from another part of the pasuk. Uinami. Lo yachel, that it makes sense here to say lo yachel, you can't eat it. Et bisaro lo malit. Then why does it say et bisaro also? That seems extraneous. Da'af agav da'av de'kein basar, de'shach de'asur. Even though you've made it into basar, it's still asur. So again, here it shows you that the lo yachel over here is talking about a case where you shechted it and made it into basar, that otherwise or in other situations would be kasher to eat. Nevertheless, over here it is asur, and that's why it says lo yachel et bisaro. It's clearly referring to achila, and achila of something that you shechted. And therefore the suggestion that this is coming to teach isur hana'ah for the shore that was niskal is clearly not the case. Either because of the first answer, lo yachel, it should have said lo yahaneh, or because of the second answer, it should have just said lo yachel. The fact that it says et bisaro makes it that we're speaking about a case where it's turned into basar, or that it is shechted, and that's only possible or plausible in a case that where he shechs it after the Gmar Din, and we'll go back to our original explanation, that is what Lo Yachel et Bisaro is coming to teach us. Tosva does note, even within Rabbi Abo, you have to differentiate between whether the Torah expresses it as Lo Tochal, Lo Tochlu, Tochelu, versus the case where the Torah expresses it as Kikol Ochel, meaning that the verb Ochel still will mean what literally Ochel means, that means Achila itself. But rather, when the Torah expresses it as a negative precept to say, don't do this, don't eat it, or don't, in essence, get hana'ah from it, because achilah is just an example of hana'ah. In that way, Tosavot solves the problem or answers a question about why in some cases we would say that it's only speaking about achilah, or only say the punishment's about achilah, not by hana'ah, is because of this distinction or differentiation, which makes sense, meaning that when you're saying the verb achilah, that is clear that you're referencing or meaning real achilah. On the other hand, when you're saying lo, don't do this, don't eat this, that don't eat this can mean don't eat this, plus don't get any hana'ah from this object, because achilah is just an example of the hana'ah. It's just a extreme form or example of hana'ah. Matkif la marzutra. Ema, hani mile heche de bodak tzur v'shachat bo. Maybe this is only true when a guy goes ahead and sharpens a stone, and then shechs with that stone, da'avde bekein tzkila. Because then when he shechs it in that manner, not only is he shechted the animal, but he's also accomplished something akin to the skila. He used a stone to kill the animal. And so in that case, we'll say that it's asur ba'achila and asur ba'ana. Avahecha d'shachte b'sakin. But in a case where he shechs it with a regular knife, lo, that would not be the case, and the shor would be mutar ba'achila, mutar ba'ana. Or what he's suggesting over here is that we should narrow the scope of this explanation. Meaning that our explanation here is that after the Gemara Din, if you shecht it, the animal is asur b'achila, asur b'hana'a. Let us say that's only true when he shechts it in a manner that replicates or is similar to the case of skila. But in any other case, that would not be true. So Amrei atu sakin k'tiva b'doraita. He says, wait a minute, what type of distinction or differentiation is this? The Torah never tells us anything about the tools or the mechanisms by which you do shechita. The knife is never written in the Torah. Vatnan. And we have a mission that says, a shochet magal yad, someone who shechs with a hand scythe, bitzur, or with a sharp stone, ubikane, or a sharp reed, shechita to ksheira. That shechita is ksheira, and Tosva go out of their way to prove here that that's a shechita lechatchila, based on a braita that is also brought in the Gemara in Chulin, but as well as in the Gemara in Kiddushim, when it discusses this to show that the method of shechita isn't as important as the fact that there is a shechita. Shechita has to be done with a sharp object that has no serrated edges to it, and it doesn't matter what the material or what the object is. If that's the case, as Tosfot says over here, since there is no knife, and you're extrapolating from knife to stone, but rather simply that there's a need to shecht, that means knife and stone are completely equal. So how can you make a distinction that Marzutra wants to suggest over here, that there should be a difference between shechting with a tzur versus shechting with a knife, but no such distinction exists within the world of Shechita whatsoever? Now the Gemara goes on and says, V'hashta nafkale isur achila v'isur hana'ah milo ye'achelet b'saro. Now we know that there's an isur achila and an isur hana'ah from lo ye'achelet b'saro. Balashor naki lomali. Then what do we do with balashor naki if we don't need it for the isur hana'ah now? V'hana'at oro. That comes to teach you that not only is the basar asur, but even the or, even the hides are asurim. Meaning that we have examples of this, for instance, by Kodashim. When an olah is brought to the Mizbeach, an olah goes completely on the Mizbeach, with the exception of the hides. The hides are given to the Kohanim. So we see that the hides of the animal sometimes are seen or are distinct from the animal itself. So maybe over here the same thing, that the animal here will be Asur Bachila, Asur Bahana'ah. That's regards to the animal itself, its basar, but not its or, not its hides. That's what the Balashon Haki comes to teach you. Not only is it the basar, but also the or, even the skins or the hides. The Sakadat Kamina, I would have thought Basaru Hudu Asur Ba'ana'ah. It's the basar of the animal, meaning that that is the animal itself, as well as the fact that it says Lo Yachal Basaro. That's what generates the Isur Hana'ah of Al Oro Nishtari Ba'ana'ah. But the or, or the hide, should be Mutar Ba'ana'ah, Kamash Balan, Balashon Haki. That's what Balashon Haki comes to teach you, that everything is Asur Ba'ana'ah, not just the basar. Then the Gemara says, Ulahanach Tanae Demafkile Lahai Balashor Naki LaDrasha Achrina. According to those Tanaim that use Balashor Naki for a different drasha, Kedivina Lamemer LaKaman, like we said further on, Hanataro Minalu, then where do they learn out this Easter of Hanataro? So according to those Tanaim, which we're going to see in a minute in the Gemara, that use Balashor Naki for a different limud, how do they know that the or is Asur Bahana'ah, like we're learning from Balashor Naki? The Gemara says, "Nafkahu me et bisaro." It says, "Lo yachel et bisaro, et hatafel libsaro." Et comes to be an inclusive term that says even things that are secondary or incidental to the basar, they are also asurim. And the or, the hide, is something that is incidental both in terms of value and in terms of utility to the basar itself, and therefore it would be included through the word et. My nihu. Oro, what is that thing, or what is that item that is tafel, that is secondary to the basar? That's the or, the hide. Vai tana et lo dorish. And the tana who learns out of Balashon Haki that that or is asur, he must believe that we don't darshin et. Kedetanya, because we had a brighta, shimanam suni, v'amila nechemyanam suni, hayat doresh kol etin shibetorah. He would doresh every et in the Torah to come to be mirabeh something. Because again, the word et is a participle that doesn't need to be there. We'll see psukim that have it, psukim that don't have it. Sometimes it's implied, sometimes it's unnecessary. And therefore the word et he sees, or chazal sees, as being completely extraneous. And for that reason he went ahead to be doresh, that every et must be coming to include something that is connected to the item that the word et is associated with. Kevin sheyigia le'et Hashem lokecha tira perash. As soon as he got to Hashem le'et Hashem lokecha tira, he stopped. He ran into a problem, because that means now I'm going to include something that is like God. But by definition, it can't be anything like God, because God is yachid u'miyuchad. He is unique and incomparable to any other item or any human being. And therefore, et Hashem lokecha tira presented him with a problem. Perash, he stopped, and he says, I can't be doresh that. Amru tamidav, Rabbi, kol etim shterashta mate elehen. All these etim that you were doresh before this point, what's going to be with them? Just like I got reward for the drashot that I made, so too I'm going to get a reward for pulling away and saying that I can't be doresh them. Again, we spent a lot more time on this in the Gemara Kedushin, but in essence what he's saying is that in the end the truth is what matters. And so getting to the truth, whether it's through drasha and knowing something and creating something, or whether it's from desisting, whether it's from understanding that the drasha that you did or you said is incorrect, that's also coming to the truth, and both of those end up with a drasha or a sense of limud Torah. Or in other words, just like I thought when I was building something, I was getting reward for building and creating, so too when I say that it's not true and I acknowledge the mistake in my drasha, that I'll be rewarded for the fact that I have come to the conclusion, or the right conclusion, that I've acknowledged or admitted that there's something wrong, and I don't try to force the drasha when it doesn't exist. The Mashal suggests that the fact that he desisted from darshaning at the Shem Lekecha Tirah was his way of showing that he has Yirat Hashem, and that he has Yirat HaRomimut, and his treatment of Hashem and being in a unique manner, and therefore the reward he gets from not darshaning at the Shem Lekecha Tirah is because through that he is upholding the true meaning of the Shem Lekecha Tirah, which is the unique qualities, the unique standing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what he means, that I will get as much reward for separating from the drasha as I do from actually doing the drashot. So therefore, Shimon HaMsuni, or Nechemiah HaMsuni over here, does not, or in the end, does not doresh the 18 Shiva Torah. Ajibar Rabbi Kiva, they made it, the Shem Lekecha Tirah, they're about Tamidei Chachamim. It comes to say that the Shem Lekecha Tirah comes to include Tamidei Chachamim, because either Tamidei Chachamim are the purveyors of Torah, so therefore they deserve the same Yirah that is given to Hashem, that should be given to the Tamidei Chachamim, or because the Tamidei Chachamim themselves are Dveikim b'Torah u'Hashem, and therefore they have a dimyon or a way to connect to Hashem, and that's why the Mishnah Navot says, Vavei mitabek ba'far raglehem, that you should draw close to the Tamidei Chachamim, because in essence they give you access and connection to Hashem. Through them you can see the glimpse of Hashem, but you also have to be careful, because if you get too close, you'll be singed, just like if you get too close to Hashem, that would be dangerous for the individual, and there has to be a certain amount of Yirah that is associated, a richuk or distance that is associated with these Tamidei Chachamim, like just like there is with Hashem. Tosfot over here asks, why do I need this riboy at all? Don't I have a pasuk that says, Mipnei Seivah Takum, which we are doresh, that that requires anyone to give proper respect and fear to a Talmid Chacham? So Tosfot says that from it, Hashem Lekecha Tirah is only an obligation with regards to Rabo Amuvhak, his primary permanent Rav, or for a Gadol Ador, they are included at the Hashem Lekecha Tirah. They have this elevated status where a person has to have the, what the Mishnah Avot says, Morei Rabcha Kemorei Shamayim. On the other hand, when it comes to any other Talmud Chacham, they are subsumed or included under the requirement of Bnei Seivah Takum, that you have to give them Kavod, you have to treat them in a manner of respect and Yirah, but not up to the level of the Hashem Lekecha Tirah. And that comes out of Mipnei Seivah Takum. But here it's about those unique individuals who have, you have that special relationship with. Here there's an elevated necessity to have more Rabcha and more Shamayim. That's why the Baal Tosfot say we need two Ribuim, or two different commandments here with regards to respect for Tamidei Chachamim. Over here, many of the Mefarshim ask, how is it that Shimon HaMsuni or Nechemiah HaMsuni over here ran into a problem with the Hashem Lekecha Tirah? Why didn't he run into a problem with the Vahafta et Hashem Elokecha? Over there you also have an et, and that et would have to be Merabeh, one to Avat Hashem. So why did he only run into a problem later on in the Torah when it got to et Hashem Elokecha Tirah versus Vahafta et Hashem Elokecha? So the Ma'aral in the Chidushei Agadot, which is a similar answer that the Rosh gives over here, says that there's a big difference. Yira talks about Richuk, and it talks about the uniqueness in the Romamut Hashem. Ahava is a connection, a chibur, and a dveikut. So over there, Shimon HaMsuni didn't have a problem with Evahavta et Hashem Elokecha, the rabot et Tamidei Chachamim, or to be rabah, something else, because that is drawing close. Drawing close, just like you draw close to Hashem through Ahava, you can draw close to other items that it could be included through the word et. On the other hand, where et refers to et Hashem Elokecha Tirah, which is the unique standing of God, over there, it's impossible to bring something that would be connected or on par with that, because that would destroy the whole element et Hashem Elokecha Tirah. The Marsha in Psachim suggests that the difference is that Mora or Yira is because Hashem can punish and reward individuals. Whereas Avat Hashem is from knowing that Hashem has the tremendous Galut Hashem. So by Avat Hashem you could include Tamidei Chachamim, because that is a connection that draws on the fact that Hashem does so much in the world and His works are incredible. And the same thing can be true by Talmidei Chachamim who learn the Torah. But Hashem Lekecha Tirah, which comes about because Hashem has the ability to give schar and onesh, to punish and reward, Talmidei Chachamim don't hold that power. Since they don't hold that power, it doesn't make any sense to include Chachamim in that ribui. The Torah Tmima suggests that if you look at the whole pasuk, at Hashem Elokecha Tirah, va'oto tavod v'yushmo tijaveya, that pasuk itself is unique to Kavod Hashem, is unique about Hashem, va'oto tavod, which you could not replicate or suggest that it should be replicated by Tamidei Chachamim. Then, va'aftat Hashem Elokecha is not something that is problematic in terms of a ribuy of Tamidei Chachamim, Because there's nothing about otot ta'avot. It's just v'avta d'Hashem okecha, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'odecha. That is something that could be replicated by avat Hashem, but not necessarily when you talk about otot ta'avot, that you should worship Him in the same way. You can't say that Talmidei Chachamim should be on the same level. So for that reason, Shimon HaMsuni or Nechemiah HaMsuni desisted from darshaning them. And that's what we mean here, that we have an opinion who says that we're not Doresh Etin Shibatorah. If you keep on the end, who is Doresh Etin Shibatorah, would be Doresh Et Bisarol to Rabotet Haor. And in the Gemara Kedushin, we discussed why maybe Rabbi Akiva was the unique individual or persona that was able to come up with the drush of Et Hashem Lekecha Tirah to refer to Talmidei Chachamim. Now the Gemara goes on to describe other drushot by Bala Shor Naki, Tan Rabbanan. Bala Shor Naki, Rabbi Elazar Meir, Naki Mechatzi Kofer. The Naki over here comes to exclude you having to pay Chatzi Kofer, meaning that when it comes to a Tam that kills, is not Chayav in Chatzi Kofer. Kofer only applies by a Muad, and there's no Chatzi Kofer kin to the Chatzi Nezek that a Tam has. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, lo hu atzmo, en mishtalem ele migufo. What's the Chiddush over here? Of course he doesn't have to pay Kofer. We know that a Tam only pays out of Gufo. Havil the Beit Din, vishalem lecha. So all the owners have to say is, bring the animal to me and I'll pay you out of the animal that's here. Meaning that there's no means by which to pay the Kofer. By Nezek, if they pay some of the Gufo, that's because the Mazik, the animal that damaged, is still around. On the other hand, by the Tam, if the Tam is put to death, Sakol Yisakel, for killing a human being, then how can you make Kofer out of Gufo? Because Gufo doesn't exist anymore. It's Asur Ba'ana, it's Asur Ba'achila, and it's dead. So Rabbi Akiva says it's obvious that you don't have to pay Kofer. I don't need a Pasuk to tell me that there is no Chatzi Kofer by a Tam. So Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, Kach ani b'enecha shidini b'zeh shechayav mita. You think in your eyes I'm like such a little guy and that I said my din when the animal is subject to me mita ain't dini ala shemita ta adam opi edachar opi abalim. My scenario or the case that I'm talking about is a case where the animal, we've testified against them either by one aid or because of the balim, because in either of those scenarios, the animal would not be put to death. So there, in those cases, there would be a possibility that you should be chayav chatzi kofer because the animal still exists and you could be mishalei migufo. And that's what the limud comes to exclude, a case of chatzi kofer. It says, al pi balim, if the balim come and admit to the fact that their animal killed, modev kenasu. That's an admission in a case of kenas, and therefore you should be patur. So what does it help? Meaning that even if the animal is still alive, the fact that the owners admitted to it would result in you being patur anyway, even if the animal is around, because it's a modev kenas. Now obviously this is premised on the fact that palganiska kenasa, but we believe that chatzi nezek is a kenas, and the Gemara's assumption here is that chatzi kofer would be under that same category of a chatzi kofer is a knas. And the Gemara answers in the end that no, kasava kufra kapara, that kofer is not a monetary payment whereby which we would determine that if you pay half of it is a knas. Rather, kufra is a kapara. And a kapara is not subject to the rules of modev knas is patur because of the fact that it is a kapara. The kapara is needed even when the balim admit to the fact that they're sure killed, the kapara is still necessary. And therefore they're not exempted from admitting in that case from the knas because it's not a knas, it's a din of kapara. Now all the Rishonim ask over here, why does the Gemara only ask him about Alpi Abalim? What about Alpi Edechad? Also Alpi Edechad, you can't obligate the Balim to pay in that case, because an Edechad only has the power to obligate the Balim to take a Shvuah. It does not have the ability to obligate the Balim to pay money. So also over there, even if you have the animal be fingered for killing someone as a Tam by one aid, and you bring him to court, they still can't pay Kofer for Migufo, even though the goof is still around, because the one aid can't obligate someone to pay money. So the Rishonim discusses, the Rashba says, Ein hochanami, but the answer is the same answer we said by Kenas, because the whole purpose of an Edechad is to force a Shvuah on the other party, and the reason you want to force a Shvuah on the other party is so that they will admit to the fact. So now, if they do admit to the fact, based on the pressing of this Edechad, then you're back to square one, which is your Modev Kenas, because the Balim are admitting to it. And so therefore, the Edechad is no different than the Balim themselves coming and speaking about it, because they both result in a Modeh B'Knas's Patur. And that's why the Gemara doesn't discuss Alpi Edechad, because it's the same as Alpi Be'alim. On the other hand, the Tosfot Rebbeinu Peretz suggests that the reason that the Gemara only asks Alpi Abalim is because if it happened Alpi Edechad, if the Balim admit to the item because of the Edechad, that is not the Balim coming and voluntarily admitting to it to be modev knas, but it's rather that the testimony of the Edechad precipitated the Balim's admission, and therefore we will assign their admission to the Eid Echad, or the cause by the Eid Echad, and therefore they would not be granted the exemption of Modeh Beknasis Patur. And that's why the Gemara does not ask about Al Pi Eid Echad here, because Eino Chanami, Al Pi Eid Echad, you would be Chayav to pay, because there would be no Modeh Beknas Patur over here. Other Rishonim, like the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Ravid, didn't have the Girsa of Al Pi Eid Echad in their Gemaras, because they felt that it wasn't correct, and they might have even eliminated the whole series of Ira question over here, because even though we see a machloken in the Gemara before as whether Kufra Kapara or Kufra Mamona, nobody suggests that Kofir is Knas. And so the whole premise of the question, even on the Balim, is mistaken, and therefore they eliminate, or in their Gusaot, they didn't have this whole section of the Gemara. Tanidach, we have another Braita about this conversation between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lezer. Amalo Rabbi Lezer Akiva, Kachani Benecha, Shedini Mezev Chayev Mita. You think that my din is speaking about a case where the animal is going to be put to death? It's a case where the animal intended to kill another animal. The other animal slipped out of the way and ended up killing an Adam. Or the Mitzri, Barag Yisrael. Or he intended to kill a Mitzri and instead he killed Israel. Linifelim, he intended to kill entities that are not viable. Barag Ben Kayama, and instead he killed a viable entity. So in those instances, there is no Sako Yisakel. Over there, the animal would not be put to death, and therefore the goof of the animal would still be around in order to pay the kofar from the goof of the animal. So, hey, Amar Lei Bereisha. Which one did Rabbi Lezer, which response did Rabbi Lezer say to Rabbi Kiva first? He said the second bright that we brought was the answer that he gave first. That's what he said first. The first bright that we brought about, Himita Adam al Pie Dechad al Pie Balim, that was the first brayta, or the first answer that Rabbi Lesser gave him. The second brayta is what he said first. It's like a fisherman that is putting his nets out in the ocean. Mishkach Ravarve Shakil. Zutre Shakil. If he finds a big fish in the beginning, he puts that aside. And then when he finds smaller fish afterwards, he also puts those aside. So again, he came with the bigger answer first, which is the answer of, it's similar to the case of Mitkaveh to kill someone that he wouldn't be subject to a death penalty for, and then he kills someone who he is subject to a death penalty, where he's not put to death, but the need for kapara kofir is still there. And that was the better answer, or the bigger answer. So he gave that first. And then afterwards, when he finds other answers, he throws those in as well. And that was the first brayta that we brought. Just like if a person catches a very big fish, he continues to fish, and he takes in the smaller fish along with the bigger fish that he had. He gave him the answer that was a smaller answer, or a less compelling answer first. It's like someone who is a fisherman that is throwing his nets into the ocean. Mishkach Zutre Shakil. When he finds small fish, he takes them in. Mishkach Ravarve. When he finds a really big fish, Shale Zutre, he throws the small fish back. Mishkach Ravarve, and he keeps the big fish. So it's over here. He first gave him the answer that dealt with Shemita Adam Pieta Charo Pia Balim, which is a smaller or less compelling answer. But then when he came up with the other bright to the other answer about the fact that it's Mitzkavin Lezeh and ended up killing someone else, once he got to that, he left behind the other answer. And so therefore, it must be that he gave the bigger answer second and not first. Because had he given it first, he wouldn't have looked for smaller answers afterwards. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Membet Amud Aleph.